More Idaho Matters now from Boise State Public Radio News. This Thursday, the Fettuccine Forum will be hosting an event that looks at the history of queer spaces throughout Idaho, beginning in the 1970s. Now, the lecture will explore where and how LGBTQ plus members found one another, how they built community, and how they ultimately found a home right here in the Gem State. So joining us today to talk more about the upcoming forum is Dr. Lisa McLean, a professor at Boise State University, and Rachel Taylor, a graduate student of history. I want to welcome both of you to the program.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Thank you for having us back.
So, Lisa, can you start out by telling us what inspired you to research the history of LGBTQ plus people, as well as communities here in Idaho?
Well, particularly for this Fettuccine Forum, we're looking at experiences for LGBTQ folk in rural areas outside Boise. And I think what kind of motivated Rachel and I is we were hearing from LGBTQ people here in Boise that Boise was the only place in Idaho that you could be gay. For example, we heard this from a fourth generation Boisean named Ned Brewer, who was an ardent human rights activist and a member of the Idaho Human Rights Task Force. And he said, he figures Boise draws in the entire gay population of the state. If there's any gay person in rural Idaho, they have got to come to Boise. But then we started seeing other indications that maybe this wasn't true. One of my favorite ones is I was looking at a publication, an LGBTQ publication called Diversity Magazine. And there's this whole column called The Cowboy Way by two gay men, Buck and Jake. And it talks about everything, about their lives together, everything from how to butcher a beef to how to house hunt out in rural Idaho. And it just let us realize that the common understanding of urban spaces as the only places for LGBTQ folk maybe isn't the truth for Idaho.
And that's so interesting because that seems to be what I think so many people assume, right, Lisa, is that this is, I mean, it's for the most part, Boise is a more welcoming place than other parts of the state.
Yes. And we generally, I think, tend to think of urban areas like that. Think of the popular perception of San Francisco or New York City, or even here in the Pacific Northwest, going to Seattle, something like that. And that certainly is an important locus for LGBTQ community, but it's not the only one. And so we're trying to listen to the stories, collect the stories and tell them about a variety of different ways that people can have absolutely fabulous lives that meet their needs out in areas beyond Boise.
Mm-hmm. So what other important or significant spaces did you find for LGBTQ plus communities in Idaho?
Basically, any space you can imagine can be an LGBTQ space for folks in Idaho. Farms and ranches, churches, obviously universities, places like Idaho State and U of I, civic organizations. All you have to do today is look at how many LGBTQ pride celebrations there are outside of Boise. Rachel even went to one in Rexburg last summer.
So I did. Rachel, talk to me about that, Rachel, because I mean, I used to live and work in Idaho Falls. I'm familiar with Rexburg, a very, very conservative part of our state, with BYU Idaho also being a main attraction in Rexburg for a lot of folks.
Right. It's a really unusual feeling for a college town to be that so conservative and so yet so populated by young people. But when I went there over the summer, it was their second annual Pride in June of 2022. I found that people were having a great time and there weren't any counter protesters. Not that I could tell. There was hundreds of people must have showed up. There were local whereas Pride in Boise can feel really corporate and there are a lot of sponsorships, in Rexburg, there were a lot of local artists, showing their work and, there were drag queens performing. It was wonderful.
So Rachel, let's keep talking about some of this history? Because in some of the research that you did, you really compared the social and the political life in queer communities around our state. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you found out?
Yeah, so Idaho is uniquely defined by the different regions around the state. Mm-hmm. There are really three main regions in Idaho, the sort of southwest region, the southeast, and the northern parts of Idaho. I've heard it joked that we have three capitals. We have Boise, we have Salt Lake City, and we have Spokane. And so these wider cultures sort of seep into different parts of the state. And so southwest Idaho is very defined by Boise and the political center that is Boise. It's also the most politically neutral part of the state. Whereas northern Idaho contains very conservative factions, but also the University of Idaho, which is where Idaho got its first gay organization, was based in Moscow. And then the eastern region of the state is very heavily LDS. And you find that people's lives there are often defined by their relationship, in part by their relationship to the church. And so they interface mm-hmm. with their queerness in that way. So there are these differences that come about in different regions of the state. And we see that personally affects queer people and how they interact with their identity.
So talk to us a little bit more, Rachel, about what you found in your research and why you both decided to start in the 1970s.
So part of that is the difficulty of finding good sources from before that, because there it's a lot harder to find things sort of categorized under queerness already before the 1970s. But basically after the Stonewall riots, which were mm-hmm. a sort of like a political uprising that began with queer people fighting back against police oppression in the late 60s in New York City, that sort of spread throughout the United States, but it took a while. It took a little longer for queer people in Boise and in the rest of the state to start coming out publicly. But we found that they did, and that they were able to find community not only in Boise with gay bars and with, you know, a higher population density. There was a greater opportunity to build a bigger queer community, but they were also able to find welcoming and accepting people around the state, partly by belonging to those communities already before they came out.
Lisa, what are you hoping that people take away from your lecture later on this week?
I would hope that people would take away the idea that, speaking very generally, there are many ways to be gay in Idaho. Mm. And we need to start looking for the stories about how this works. For example, in talking with several lesbians out in eastern Idaho, we found out that most people, and these are those who identify as LDS. I'm sort of like the religion person in Rachel's and my partnership, because I really mm-hmm. focus on the history of gender and sexuality in Christianity. And so you have to acknowledge the importance of the LDS church in particular out in eastern Idaho. And the common perception is that if you are LGBTQ and you are LDS, you have to choose one or the other. And I'm not saying that it's easy or that there isn't a lot of hostility or stigma of a variety of sorts. But among the women that Rachel and I know about, we found that some people chose to suppress their LGBTQ identity, but others didn't. They were out, and they actually carved out spaces for themselves within the LDS church. One of my favorites is a story of a woman named Mary, who identifies as a fourth generation Idahoan, somebody whose ancestors came in with Joseph Smith into Utah over a century ago. And she talks about how she and her partner, her lesbian partner, stayed in the church and even went out on Pioneer Days in Pocatello, which is a really big, you know, parade that happens every summer. And right there, they have posters claiming that they are returned missionaries, that they are out and proud lesbian mothers, and that love makes a family, basically. And being able to see someone who looks like you, who has the same desires that you do and is carving out a life that you want, matters to a lot of people. And a lot of people want to stay in areas outside of Boise because they have family connection, community connection, or maybe they just really love that Idaho quality of life, hunting and fishing and being in the mountains that so many of us love. And there is space for all of us there. That's what I would hope people would take away.
And Rachel, for you, same question. I mean, what are you hoping that people walk away from when they hear this lecture?
I hope that people feel represented and see themselves in the lecture. Part of what motivated me to do this research was sort of growing up outside Boise in Idaho, and not feeling like there was any history to be found where I grew up, like I was inventing being queer for the first time in that town. And I think that this is sort of proof that that's not the case. And I think it makes people feel supported in this, like they have a history because they do.
You put it so Lisa, much better than I just did, Rachel. You put it so much better. It's like if you don't see yourself in history, in some ways, it's as if you don't exist.
Right. And I know one of the things that you explored with your research is there is no one way to be gay. Right. There is. And I think that sometimes, once again, getting back to this idea that all gay people live in urban areas, that's just not the case. And so, I mean, Lisa, is that also a takeaway that you would like people to have? Is that, as Rachel mentioned, there is history of LGBTQ plus community in every community in our state.
Exactly. And I would add to that is sometimes we might presume that if we don't see the history, that that's because people feel they have to be underground or closeted, they cannot be gay. But what we found in a lot of people's stories since 1970s out in areas beyond Boise are people who say, everybody in my community knows that I'm gay. They don't have a problem with it. I myself don't feel the need to come out all the time or be out or be part of a political action group, things along those lines. That's not how they want to be gay, not because they're feeling necessarily oppressed, but it's just not their comfort level, how they want their life to be. And honoring that and respecting that as one of many models of LGBTQ life in Idaho would be important. I would also suggest that I hope that Rachel's in my talk inspires people to start talking to their neighbors a bit more, talking to people about these issues. What many people that we've seen out in other areas of Idaho, one of the most famous examples I can think of is there was a very famous divorce case out in Idaho Falls with a man named Theron McGriff, who after his divorce, he came out as gay and got into a very committed relationship, and his wife sued for full custody of the children. And this made national news. They were interviewed on Today Show and things like that. Mm-hmm. And McGriff tells this wonderful story about how during this time, an editorial appeared in a newspaper in a smaller area around Idaho Falls that made some rather mean-spirited claims about McGriff and his partner. And so McGriff called up the editorial writer, and he said they talked for an hour on the phone, only to find they had quite a bit in common, and that by the end of the call, the writer apologized to McGriff for the editorial and said he would never do something like that again without knowing the person, that he would never make assumptions. So if we can have these conversations and get past assumptions or presumptions, that's another one of my hopes for a takeaway from this.
And isn't that just the hope, right? Is that we realize that I think that we are so much more similar than different, and we forget that so often. I want to thank both of you so very much for coming on the program. Really appreciate your insight.
It was our pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. We have been talking with Dr. Lisa McLean. She is a professor at Boise State University, as well as graduate student Rachel Taylor, about Idaho's queer history. Now, you can hear Lisa and Rachel talk more about their research. They'll be doing this Thursday night, and you can either do this in person or online. It's at Boise's Fettuccine Forum at Boise City Hall. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
This new year, LifeKit wants to help you succeed because everyone needs a little help being human.
It can seem so overwhelming. You're not alone.
Who can I commit to being?
If you want to do something, then just do it. Just take that first step.
Great advice every week. Listen to LifeKit from NPR.